Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 426 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger. It is, of course, the main man, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, sir?
I'm doing good, my man. How's you feeling?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. I'm going to dive straight into the review part of the show. This one went down last Friday, December the 8th, at The Fuse in Partington, Manchester, Lancashire, United Kingdom. Couple fights to mention, two guys that are friends of the show. We're going to start here with Paul Butler. He's now 36-3. A KO for him in round two against Nabil Ahmed, who's now 2-26 with two draws, a complete and utter mismatch, as we all knew going in. Ahmed down in the second round prior to being knocked out by a right hand. Also on the card, Callum Johnson, like I say, returned to the ring for the first time in, I think, 2 years. He obviously came back here at cruiserweight, and he only had a couple of days' notice, but Daryl Sharp stepped in, who's a really tough journeyman, who was eight wins, 120 losses and a draw. But he'd only been stopped three times. Well, Callum Johnson's actually stopped him in the first round there, so I suppose that's a bit of a statement, even though, obviously, you know, Callum Johnson at his very best was world level, and Daryl Sharp is a journeyman, so let's not get too carried away. But it's still a bit of a statement, although, like I say, there's a real mismatch in terms of levels there. Moving now to the York Hall in Bethnal Green, I was at this card here. I'm going to just touch on two fight results. Archie Sharp, friend of the show, now 24-0. A points win for him over eight rounds against Victor Julio, who's now 16-10. I was saying Victor Julio is very consistent. He put together 16 wins in a row and then 9 losses going in, but it's now 10 losses. I think he'd been stopped in about 4 or 5 of those 9 losses going in. I expected Archie Sharp to stop him, but it didn't look likely at any point over the 8 rounds. But yeah, a dominant one-sided victory there for Archie Sharp, who, you know, again, will be looking to have a big fight in the early part of 2024. And also on the card, the main event, we'll be speaking to him a little bit later on in the show. Elliot Wow with a win here. He's now 8-0 with 4 KOs. His opponent, Darren Tetley, retired at the end of round 4 with an injury to his eye, so didn't come out for round 5. Darren Tetley now 22-6, and Elliot Wow becomes the quickest man to stop Darren Tetley. Great win there for Elliot Wow. Moving now to the Wind Creek Event Center in Pennsylvania, USA over here. Former world champion Jarrett Hurd with a win. He's now 25-3. He was able to beat Ty Edmonds, who's now 14-6. Ty Edmonds didn't come out for round 5, so a fourth round retirement win there for Jarrett Hurd, who, as we know, is in horrendous form. Three of his last 4 fights he's lost, and he was coming off 2 back-to-back losses, including a KO loss in his last fight back in March. I didn't see that fight there the other night, but, you know, it's good to see him back with a win at least. I just can't understand how he fell off so bad from being such a dominant world champion at 154. He now finds himself up at super middleweight for that one there. Also on that card, friend of the show, Jesse Hart, is now 30-3. A TKO for him in round 3 against the overmatched Jason Minder, now 14-8 with a draw. All the best there to Jesse Hart, friend of the show. Moving now to the Pullman Hotel in Albert Park, Victoria, Australia over here. friend of the show, former world champion Andrew Maloney, proceeded to 26-3. A unanimous decision there over 10 rounds against Judy Flores, now 13-2. All the best there to Andrew Maloney. Moving now to France, over here at the Stade Roland Garros in Paris. Over here, Tony Yoker once again upset. He's now 11-3 with all three losses in a row. Unbelievable. This Olympic gold medalist has really fell off so bad. He got in there with Riyad Mehri, who's not a fantastic fighter at all, but Mehri's now 32-2. A split decision over 10 rounds there for Mehri. And I think Tony Yoker is done, really. A lot of people were saying, look at his face when they announced the winner. He looked like, you know, he looked like he knew his career was over. He looked like he knew, you know, what is he going to do next kind of thing. It should be noted as well, though, that his losses have all been on points and have all been either split decisions or majority decisions. But, yeah, I'm not sure what's happened to him. I really thought he'd win. And the price was quite short on him, but I thought it was worth it. But, yeah, once again, he loses. Moving now to the Agenda Arena in Dubai. Over here, friend of the show, former WBA heavyweight world champion Lucas Brown, now 31-5. He was TKO'd in round 4 by the undefeated Mark Petrovsky, who I think is now 7-0 with all 7 by a KO. Could be wrong. I'm not sure how many knockouts he's got. I'm pretty sure he'd knocked everyone out. Maybe 5 knockouts out of 6 going in. But anyway, another knockout for him against Lucas Brown. I don't want to see Lucas carry on for too much longer, to be totally honest with you. Moving now to the Thunder Studios in Long Beach, California, USA over here. Another friend of the show, another former world champion, Mark Magsayo, now 25-2. A KO for him in round 3 against Isaac Avalar, who's now 17-7. Quite a bad knockout there. Avalar had to be stretching out of the ring. I hope he's okay. I haven't heard any further updates, but I'm hoping he's okay, he's healthy. And moving now to the Chase Center in San Francisco, California, USA. I'm gonna come straight to you, Eddie, here actually. Regis Prograin, now 29-2, dethroned of his WBC World Super Lightweight title against Devin Haney, who is now 31-0. Captures another world title in another weight class. Prograin down, very unexpectedly down in round 3. And yeah, they've announced now that Devin Haney was in the ring weighing 165 pounds. I think Regis weighed about 156. So yeah, Devin Haney 165. Yeah, talk me through the fight, Eddie. What did you make of it? And yeah, what did you make of it?
You know, had a lot of obvious and in some ways criticism of, you know, some of the things Devin Haney does as far as how he, and it's not a lot of criticism. It's not negative criticism. It's just what you would like to see make him better. You know what I mean? Skill wise, he's phenomenal. You know what I mean? Offensively, I think defensive responsibility is something he needs to be a little more concerned with. But I seen a lot more of that in this fight. I mean, don't get me wrong. There were some times he took chances, and you got to take chances in order to be great. But it has to make sense within a fight situation. You know what I'm saying? And in this situation, I really think that most people, including myself, expected much more from Prograin. But it's just he was overmatched skill wise. You know what I mean? It was just a lot for him to deal with. I don't think he's ever had to deal with someone to the magnitude of what Devin Haney is skill-wise. And even though he's not explosively powerful, he has good explosive speed. And with his weight being 165 pounds or 64 pounds, I mean, even if you're not a normal puncher, you're still going to feel you're still going to be some kind of pain. And you could see it, you know, at different times he was catching Prograin with some good, beautiful counter shots, counter right hands. And it was just it was a magnificent performance for him. I give him all the credit. I still think he needs to be I'm not trying to say that of course I always advocate for guys to be, you know, do the right thing in the right situation, don't put themselves in position to get hurt unnecessarily. So, you know, I still think he should take chances, but just not unnecessarily. So that'd be the only thing. But as far as criticism, honestly, for him, after this performance, there is none. I think he did an awesome job. I think he literally won every round. You know, so obviously he dominated the fight. I think early in the fight, though, Prograde was trying to get a foothold, was trying to do a few things, but it just wasn't working. You know what I mean? You could see the difference in ability and skill. And, you know, the good thing about Prograde after the fight was over, he understood things that he needed to do to improve and what he needs to go back to the gym and improve upon before his next fight. Because, you know, even though Devin Haney's a special fighter, there are things you see within the fight that can, you know, exploit him, even if you're other less talented fighters. So, I'm thoroughly impressed with what Devin Haney did. He's, you know, he keeps on, you know, even though there's a lot of, you know, there's some negative things that go along with him, you know, with what people are saying about what he could and should be doing as a fighter and who he should be fighting. But everybody just steps in front of him, even guys like this who are dangerous and very, it could be difficult to fight. He line him up, he knocks him down. So as things look right now, he's in a good, solid situation, and I'm hoping to see him in there soon. Hopefully, with a name that we all recognize and want to see him in against. But man, you gotta get a kid credit. He looked awesome.
Yeah, massive credit to Haney. I mean, that's definitely the performance of his career. It's a real solid win, and no one can take it away from him. Obviously, the early couple of rounds, and I really do mean couple of rounds, were just, you know, feel-outs, kind of cagey stuff. You know, Regis at that point was using a bit of his lateral movement. But yeah, then, you know, he started to outwork Prograde. Even in those early rounds, he was taking the rounds. And that's when, obviously, in the third round, Prograde walks into a jab and down he goes. Perfectly timed by Haney. I don't think Prograde was particularly hurt, but obviously a 10-8 round. And it was a horrible start to the fight for Prograde. And I think from that point onwards, Haney just grew and grew and grew in confidence. He was able to execute a fantastic game plan. We all knew he wasn't going to stand in the ring and trade and give Regis, you know, a big chance, you know, in the fight to touch him up. Bill Haney was doing a lot of talking in the build-up, saying you're not going to step to Haney. Obviously, it was all kidology in the end. You know, Haney was never going to fight him like that. And to his credit, I thought he was brilliant. You know, I think Haney looked really good engine-wise. Didn't seem to be tired at any point. He was really mastering the distance as well. You know, obviously having the longer arms, he was able to catch Regis when Regis would be falling short time and time again. But yeah, I think the story of the fight really was the speed of Haney, not just with his hands, but also with his feet as well. Regis was just too slow, once again doing the same stuff that we criticized him for doing in his last fight, unable to cut off the ring. You know, after a few rounds, you could just see, like, there's nothing that Regis Prograde can do with Haney. You know, it was all Haney. And like I say, the scorecards reflect that. 120-107 across all three. So, you know, Regis didn't even win a round. Very, very easy fight to score. I think Regis as well was hurt a few times in there, but again, he was never going to get stopped by Haney, no way. But yeah, I mean, we said it on last week's show, it's either going to be Prograde KO or Haney on points. I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to predict that, to be honest with you, but it went the way that we thought it could have gone. It was just a case of if Haney could keep it up, and if Regis would allow Haney so many exit routes. You know, when he got him against the ropes, he wouldn't close off the exit. And, you know, like I say, Haney just too good on his feet. So, yeah, massive credit to him. You know, I'm quite happy with the fact he's moved. He's won all the belts at 135, come up to 140. He's beaten Regis there. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with him next. I would love to see him in with Subriel Matias. I'm sure you would agree there, Eddie. But anyway, moving on to the other fights on the card. Liam Parro with a win. He's now 24-0. I actually thought Montana Love could pull off an upset because he was the underdog. I thought Montana Love was worth a little shot at about 3-1 on points. And it was going that way. I think Montana Love was boxing quite nicely early on. But like I said on last week's show, I don't think he holds a shot too well. And he goes down twice in round six. You know, he just got caught. And when he gets caught, he kind of struggles from that point onwards. You know, he gets hurt and doesn't really know what to do and ends up trying to trade and gets caught again. So he goes down twice in round six, and that's the KO. It was for the WBO Global Super Lightweight title. Montana Love finds himself in a difficult spot now, 18-2 with a draw. He's lost two in a row, both to Australian fighters. Liam Parro moves on. Ebony Bridges as well in an absolute shocker. I don't know if you saw this, Eddie. I wasn't watching this fight. I was watching the other card. So I actually missed this one and I'm not going to watch it back. But in a nutshell, Ebony Bridges was fighting here. I think it was the defense of her IBF World Bantamweight title. On last week's show, I was unsure if the belt was vacant because it said it was vacant. But apparently it wasn't vacant in the end. So I don't know what was going on there. But anyway, Ebony Bridges defending her title against Mayo Yoshida, who had lost the fight 4 weeks earlier and was given about a week's notice, maybe 10 days notice. Basically, they offered the fight to the girl that beat her 4 weeks ago, but the girl in question, Sharetta Metcalf, she turned it down because she said, I'm not really prepared, so I'd rather, you know, have some proper notice. So they offered it to the girl that she beat. And then Mayo Yoshida goes in there with, like I say, a week to 10 days notice against Ebony Bridges and wins a unanimous decision. And the scorecards in the end, 99-91, 99-91 again, and 97-93. So basically she's gone in there on short notice and completely dominated Ebony Bridges, who's now 9-2, loses her world title. And Mayo Yoshida, the new champion, now 17-4. I think her daughter got in the ring afterwards. There was a lot of tears. It was nice to see that little bit there. Ebony Bridges has gone back to the UK and bought a new Porsche, which she is gifting to herself as a Christmas present. But I think, you know, she needs to get back in the gym, man, because I don't know. I've never been a massive fan of hers, and yeah, she's been found out there a little bit, and that's really bad. You give someone about a week's notice, 10 days notice, they're coming off a loss 4 weeks ago, and they go in there and dominate you almost every round. That's embarrassing, man. Also on the card, Andy Cruz looked really, really good. A third round KO against Giovanni Strafon, who's now 26-6 with a draw. Andy Cruz, like I say, I thought we could see a few rounds here. I did expect a few rounds. Strafon had only been stopped once. And Andy Cruz, you know, in his one other fight, had gone the distance. There was nothing to suggest he was going to be a knockout artist. However, there was a lot of spite in those shots. And you could see Strafon just didn't have the technical nous to be able to deal with what Cruz was bringing to the table. Cruz hit him flush so many times, even in the first round. And it was only going to be a matter of time before he got the stoppage. And he did get it in the third round. So a brilliant performance from the Olympic gold medalist. Now 2-0 as a pro. That one was for the IBF International Lightweight title. Also on the card as well, Beatriz Ferreira with a KO in round 8, the final round. She's now 4-0. That one was against Destiny Jones, who's now 5-2. I think she was quite upset to be stopped there. I can't remember entirely what happened, but I'm pretty sure she was complaining. I think the referee might have stopped it. Can't remember now, but Destiny Jones was down in round 7. That's really it, really. Moving now, though, to a Charles F. Dodge City Center in Pembroke Pines, Florida, USA. Eddie, I don't know if you saw any of this. If you did, please jump in. The guy that you spoke about on last week's show that you sparred with, Damian Naiba, he is now 13-0, a unanimous decision over 8 rounds against Michael Coffey, now 13-5. Also on the card, we should mention this one as well. He was a slight underdog, but Jahi Tucker, he is now 10-1 with a draw. Like I say, it was supposed to be a 50-50 fight on paper, and it ended up being a 50-50 fight because it ended in a majority draw over 8 rounds against the undefeated Francisco Veron, who's now 13-0, still undefeated, but with a draw now, a minor blemish. Also on the card, Richard Torres Jr., he got took the longest he's ever been took. He almost didn't get the KO to keep that streak going. He's now 8-0 with 8 KOs, a TKO in the 8th and final round against Curtis Harper, who's now 14-11. Credit to Harper, man. I got to say, he's really, really tough, and he doesn't really stop giving up, or he doesn't give up easy, I should say. You know, he gets in there and tries to give it his all, takes so many big shots as well. He's a real, you know, he's a real tough guy, a proper good chin. But he took some heavy, heavy shots, and he was able to weather a few storms that Torres brought to the table. So, yeah, it was a really good test for him there. Really, really good test. But he did end up getting the stoppage in that 8th and final round. Curtis Harper would be quite disappointed with that. But, yeah, good stuff for Richard Torres. Like I say, a real learning fight for that young man there. Also on the card, Rohan Polanco moved to 11-0, a TKO for him in round 6 against Keith Hunter, now 15-2. Keith Hunter, friend of the show. I tell you what, Polanco looks super duper sharp in there, especially in the first couple of rounds. He looked spiteful as well, you know, like you could see he wasn't really bothered by the power in the punches of Keith Hunter, and he was kind of just laughing at him, you know, clowning him and coming back with bigger shots. He looked solid, he looked strong, and he looked powerful. And Keith Hunter, to his credit, took some big shots early on, but then I'd say around about round sort of 3, 4, 5, I think Keith was getting back into it and may have nicked a couple of rounds in there. But Rohan Polanco was extremely impressive, man. Extremely impressive. Keith did hurt him. I think it may have been round 4 or round 5. He definitely buckled his legs. I don't think there was enough time in the, you know, left in the round to sort of do anything more than just buckle his legs. But the stoppage came in round 6 when the referee jumped in, and Keith Hunter was he lost his marbles for a few seconds, to be honest with you. I think he shoved the referee. He was, you know, running around the ring like a crazy animal, and, you know, big brother Michael had to jump in and kind of grab hold of him. You know, his head had gone in the moment there. He was fuming to have been stopped. You know, he definitely that's gonna hit him quite hard. I don't think he's got a problem with losing a fight, but I think he's got a massive problem with being stopped, especially like that. He seemed okay. It seemed a bit premature from the referee, and he's a very proud man with, you know, I don't want to say ego, but he's a very proud man, very, very proud man, and he'll be very gutted to have been stopped there. But I've got to say, Rohan Polanco looked really, really good, and certainly is one to watch for the future. Really excited to see what they do with him. So yeah, that was a bit of a shame there. Keith Hunter, friend of the show. Also on the card, a TKO in the second round. He looked really good. Bruce Carrington, now 10-0, ending the year with double figure wins. A TKO there against Jason Sanchez, now 16-5. Xander Zayas as well. I missed this one, but he got in there with Jorge Fortea. Zayas now 18-0. Fortea now 24-4 with a draw. Fortea was knocked out in round 5 for the NABF and WBO NABO super welterweight titles. And then the main event, Eddie, I don't know if you saw any of this. I'm guessing you probably didn't, but Robeci Ramirez, now 13-2, he lost a majority decision over 12 rounds to Rafael Espinoza, who's now 24-0. It was for the WBO World Featherweight title. Robeci Ramirez, the very skillful Cuban, dethroned. Espinoza was down in round 5, Ramirez was down in round 12, and I hate to say this, and this is really bad, I was hoping that you had seen some of it, because I completely missed it, because it clashed with the Haney Prograis card, or main event. The scorecards in the end, 113-113, 114-112, and 115-111. Both of those scorecards for Rafael Espinoza. He probably won the fight purely from the knockdown in that last round. Managed to win a 10-8 there and win by 2 points on one card. That one, if that round would have gone to Ramirez and he didn't get dropped, then Ramirez would have won the fight. So, yeah, everyone that's seen it tells me it was fight of the year. I guess I have to go and look back at it, but I don't know if you saw any of it, Eddie.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of the replay of it. Not the replay, you know, like I watched it back some. Man, the one knockdown the Ramirez had on him, Lord, it was like that was over. And it wasn't, which I was like, damn. it was one hell of a fight. And just watching it, I didn't get a chance to watch the entire thing. I watched the parts. But they were absolutely going at it. The messed up part is I had a little parlay going.
Oh, no, not again.
Yes. And I picked, I can't remember what round he dropped him in because I was watching the highlights. But like I said, the knockdown looked awesome. Like, boom, like he was gone. What round was the knockdown
Ramirez,
in? You know?
Ramirez dropped him in round 5.
Man, if that would have been it, that part of the parlay would have still been going. And I could, I mean, there's still a few fights would have been left that I, you know, but I could have made 7,000 off. He ruined it. Now watch all the other fights, the rest of the fights that are upcoming, actually come through and in the parlay, which sucks. But anyway, I did not expect that. You know what I mean? I figured that he would win it and win it. And that's why I picked him kind of early to catch the guy, you know, early in the fight, but didn't work out for me in that way. But unfortunately for him, you know, he ended up losing the fight. But it was one hell of a fight. And I know anyone who likes boxing in any way, because it was pretty well skilled too. It wasn't just a, you know, rock 'em sock 'em robot, so to speak. It was some good things in the fight that you could take from. But I would love to see him do it again. You know what I mean? And this time, I'll definitely be paying attention and hopefully be able to watch it live. So, but yeah, unfortunately, that didn't work out for me as far as the bet. But the fight in itself did everything for the fans. So, I mean, that's a that's a win, just not for me.
Yeah, I definitely need to watch it back because a lot of people, like I say, saying it was fight of the year. And we're coming to the end of the year. And obviously, very soon, we're going to have to do our end of year special podcast where we talk about the best fight of the year and stuff. So I'm going to have to probably go back and watch it. One thing I will say is, yeah, no one really expected this because Rafael Espinoza was 23-0 with 20 KOs. It was a bit worrying to find out he was a 6'1" featherweight, but, you know, he hadn't beaten anyone. And we didn't expect much. I mean, everyone thought that Ramirez was going to win and was going to, you know, win easy. He was a huge favourite and he's lost there. He's been upset in a big, big upset. And moving to the final card to mention, it went down on Sunday at the Bournemouth International Centre in Dorset, United Kingdom. It was live on Sky. A couple fights to mention on the undercard. First, Francesca Hennessy, now 2-0, a points win for her over 6-2s against Lucrecia Arrieta, who was really tough, by the way. Took some big shots. Looked exhausted after about 3 rounds, but she was brave. She took, like I say, a lot of big shots and, you know, she survived. She's now 6-6. Lauren Price with a points win over 8 2-minute rounds against Sylvia Bartot, who's now 11-4 with a draw. Lauren Price 6-0. Ben Whitaker with a very dominant and flamboyant showboating performance. He was able to... Wow, it was a great shot, actually, to finish things. He was able to TKO in round 4 Steven Dredhage, who's now 11-3 with a draw. The pair had sparred in the past as well. Ben Whitaker now 5-0, like I say. Dredhage down in the third. But yeah, that knockout, that shot, I can't remember the shot now, but I think it was a 1-2. He was devastating. It was devastating. Just folded him up like a pancake. It was bad. So yeah, hope that Dredhage is okay. But yeah, Ben Whitaker, like I say, he's a little bit like Marmite. You either love him or hate him. I think he's really good. Also on the card, Lee Cutler now 14-1. A dominant performance for him. A unanimous decision over 10 rounds for the vacant English super welterweight title against Kingsley Egbenike, now 8-3 with a draw. Michael McKinson as well with a very dominant performance over 10 rounds there. I couldn't believe that you could over double your money for Michael McKinson to win the fight on points. He got in there with the completely unknown Moussa Lawson, who was 11-0, I think with 9 KOs, but McKinson Like I say, I think he won every round. He's now 26-1 over 10 rounds there for the vacant WBC International Silver Welterweight title. And the main event, Chris Billam-Smith, now 19-1. His opponent, Matthias Mastrnek, retired on his store at the end of round 7, didn't come out for round 8. Mastrnek now 47-6. It's the second time in 53 fights that he's been stopped, and he last got stopped over 10 years ago. It was for the WBO Cruiserweight World title. Billam-Smith cut over the left eye, and Mastrnek retired on his stool due to a rib injury. What a real get out of jail card that was for Chris Billam-Smith. He was being dominated by the Polish fighter. Mastrnek was brilliant. Mastrnek was absolutely brilliant. Much smaller guy in stature, smaller arms and stuff, but he was able to just get in range, and he had a really powerful jab. He kept catching Billam-Smith with the hard jab to the face. He had more on his shots. He was hitting him with hooks. He was giving angles. His feet were great. He was too fast for the very kind of sloppy, clumbersome, and what's another word for Chris Billam-Smith, the way he boxed the other night? Clumsy, you know, very clumsy. It was a bizarre performance. I mean, I said it on last week's show, Mastrnek, he was well worth the 3-1 odds. I thought, you know, I was quite confident he'd win. I was saying, who has Chris Billam-Smith really beat? Okay, he beat Lawrence Okolie, but it was more a case of Okolie beating himself. Mastrnek was excellent and was certainly on his way to winning the fight. I saw him go from 3-1 right down to not even evens. He was like, he had it in the bag, and then he gets caught with a body shot and a few ribs, I think, broke, and that was the end of that. He didn't want to come out again. A lot of people obviously very quick to come on Twitter and call him a quitter and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know, man. But what a shame for Mastrnek there. He almost had that fight in the bag. I know it was only round 7, but there was still 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. But Chris Billam-Smith kind of needed a knockout, and he got one. So credit to him for finding the shot. Like I say, it's a 12-round fight. He did get to him with the body shots. But prior to that, he had no answers for Mastrnek. And it's a very worrying performance from Chris Billam-Smith, even though he won the fight. I think he's there for the taking. I mean, I've always thought that, to be honest. I think he's done very, very well to become a world champion. I don't truly think he's world level. I mean, you know, imagine him against Jai Oppertai. Like, that's lamb to the slaughter type stuff. But I do like Chris Billam-Smith. Okay, that is it, though, for the review part of the show. It's now time to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the undefeated welterweight prospect fresh off his stoppage win last week. It is, of course, Mr. Elliot Wow. Elliot, welcome to the show, my man.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So, Elliot, it's the first time we've had you on, so welcome once again. You're 8-0 now. I was at your fight on Friday to witness it. Before we get to that, though, I noticed that, obviously, you boxed in October and December this year, but prior to that, you were out the ring for quite a long time, 18 months. What kept you out so long, my man?
So, obviously, I was with MTK. That's when I started my career with MTK. And then my last fight with them was April the 15th. And then literally a couple of days later, they got forced out of boxing. And obviously, the company ended up closing down. And from then, it was just pretty hard to get working with people. And I ended up leaving my manager, Lee Eaton, who was a good manager, to be fair, but I just felt like for my career, I needed to move on. And at the time, obviously, I was down in the iBox, and my coach sort of said that he could get me a deal with BT, and told me to sign a contract with Francis Warren. And obviously, we would do that and get the ball rolling with the deal from BT. Then, once I signed the contract, it was sort of like the going up to the ball, like the meeting. Sorry, like the office was sort of getting longed off a little bit, and they was trying to put me on a couple of little small shows. And obviously, at the time, I hadn't fought for a while. I said I'd do them. Then both times, the fights got done. Fight week, they got cancelled. The shows got cancelled. So it happened twice, and then obviously, you're paying all money out for camps, and you know what I mean, and you don't get none of this money back. So obviously, two fights got cancelled on fight week, and then I sort of, they said to move, because I'd done all my tickets. They was like, look, you can fight on a show next month, another small show. And I sort of said, no, I wanted to go and sign this deal that I've been promised. Do you know what I mean? And then it all sort of went a little bit quiet. And then, yeah, I don't know. Like, it just went a little bit quiet, weren't really happening. Then eventually I got released from my manager's contract. And then I felt like my best option was to leave the gym, you know what I mean? Because at the time, I just, nothing was really happening for me. Don't think my best interests were at heart. So I ended up leaving the gym, having a little bit more time out, and decided to get in a new gym. And since I've joined that team, it's been really good. And they've got me out. I literally went up there just a couple of months before October, and they've got me out in October and in December again. So yeah, happy days. So I'm back now.
It's good to see you back active, and also it's good to get the backstory. Obviously, a lot of, you know, boxing fans and stuff don't know about the politics and all the rest of it. It's such a such a difficult game outside of the ring.
It's the pro game's very, very hard. It's a very, very hard game. The business side of things, like the fighting's easy, you know what I mean? But it's hard. But the business side's really, really difficult. And yeah, look, it just weren't working out in my area and at iBox and whatever, so I've ended up leaving there, and it seems to be the right move, so I'm happy.
And yeah, as you said there, you know, you was previously at the iBox with Al Smith. Who are you training under now, Elliot?
So I train at Box Smart Elite in Walsall. The coach is called Shiny. He's actually he's an amateur coach as well as a pro coach. He's got a decent, he's got a pretty good pro stable. A lot of fighters that are prospects. He's got Aaron Bowen, who's with Matchroom. He's got Macaulay, Owen, Jim Smith. They're with BT. I think Dan Kerrigan's going to go with BT or TNT, Frank Warren, whoever you want to call him. So he's got a good little stable of prospects, and I sort of knew him from the amateurs, and he took me on my last fight as an amateur to Italy. And obviously, he obviously follows me on Instagram. We all follow each other on Instagram. And he could see I weren't fighting. And he used to always just reach out to me and stuff like that. Then in the end, he said about coming up there and trying it out. So I went up there. So I trained with him in the evenings. Then my manager's now Errol Johnson. And he's got a gym, BCB, which obviously got like Liam Davis, Tyler Denny, Zach Parker. Obviously, a few others as well. I train with them in the mornings. So that's why I'm up there that way now, Monday to Thursday.
So that's a lot of a lot of driving.
Yeah, well, I stay up there. I get a hotel and stay up there. Obviously, it's a difficult one because, well, at the time of the contract stuff going on, when I was at Ironbox and they're not fighting, my missus was pregnant, so it sort of gave me the kick up the arse. You know what I mean? To sort of get my contract back and leave the gym, because I felt like I needed to do this. And then obviously my little boy was born, and a couple of months later I was up in Walsall. It's like, you know what I mean, a bit of a mental one, but I'm doing it for them, and you know what I mean, myself as well. So the right thing to do, I think.
Yeah, no, excellent. I'm happy for you. Just to let the listeners know, I just wanted to ask some of the names that you've sparred over the years, Elliot. I know that you must have sparred some good fighters over the years. Just drop us a couple of names.
So as an amateur, I went and sparred Josh Taylor for the Victor Postol fight. Funny enough, I sparred Luke Campbell when he was fighting Lomachenko. Done loads of rounds with O'Hara Davis, who's now going to go on and fight for a world title if he wins his next fight. Do you know what I mean? He's an eliminator to fight for a world title. I've been done loads of rounds with him. Josh Taylor, Luke Campbell. Obviously, now down at my new gym, sparring the likes of like Tyler Denny, who's a European champion now. Even at Ironbox, to be fair. We had loads of sparring there. Jordan Reynolds, Danny Dignam, Pierce O'Leary, like Kevin Ajarko. There's loads of people. I've sparred loads.
Sam Noakes as well.
Yeah, Sam Noakes as well. Yeah. Another good fighter.
Wicked, man. So yeah, let's get to get to the main reason that you're on Friday. You moved to 8-0, as I said, a stoppage in the corner when Darren Tetley decided not to come out for round 5. As I said, I was there, but for those that didn't get to see it, just talk us through the fight, my man. And another note, you've become the quickest man to stop Tetley as well.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I feel like that fight there, I've done what other people couldn't do to Tetley. Obviously, he's a real good fighter, and it was my toughest test to date as a professional. And look, the early rounds, I obviously only went 4 rounds, but the rounds 1 and 2 were pretty nick and tuck. It was quite close. Like, we were sort of both in each other out with a jab. He had a pretty good jab, but I felt like my shots were more effective. And to be fair, the first 2 rounds were close, but I felt like I was winning the rounds. Do you know what I mean? I felt like I was winning the rounds. And then come the 3rd round, I sort of loosened up a little bit, found a bit of a better rhythm, and I thought I won that one. Pretty comfortably, and then the 4th round, I caught him with a really good 1-2 down the pipe, and I think it broke his eye socket, and then that's what caused him to not come out.
So
he said, because obviously at the time, I don't know, Darren's tough, you know, like he's boxed a lot of people and he's been put over. I've got back up, carried on fighting, do you know what I mean? So I was expecting to either get him out there later on or go the distance, you know what I mean? Because I know he's tough, I know he's a tough man. And, I was a bit shocked when he didn't come out. Then obviously he said to me after, like in the ring, he said, in the 1st round, I perforated his eardrum, he thinks. And then he was like, you've done something to my eye socket, because he said, like, his whole face has gone numb. And it turns out, that he's broke it or fractured it or whatever. So,
right, okay. Yeah. Nice for clearing that up, because on BoxRec, I think they've got it down as a cut. And I remember being there saying, like, thinking I couldn't see a cut. And I was actually going to ask, how bad was this cut? Because I couldn't really see it from where I was sitting.
He didn't have no cut. No.
Okay.
That's what it was. It was a fractured eye socket or a broken eye socket. I'm not sure.
And going into the fight, I mean, I thought it was a really big step up for you. And if I'm being honest, quite risky. You look at his recent form, you know, it's not great on paper, but he's been more than competitive in most of those losses. Did you think it was a risky fight, Elliot, or were you just kind of oozing with confidence going in?
Do you know what? I think it was the right fight for me at the right time. Listen, my team, they know me from amateurs. They know the level that I can get at, then obviously I'm training hard. That they believe in me, you know, and I believe in myself. And on paper, it did look it looked even, and it looked like a hard fight. But I know my own level and I know my own ability. And like I said, I thought I was either going to go the distance or get him out late. But I was confident of getting the job done. And proved it was the right decision to make, really.
And you didn't waste many shots at all. I thought your shot placement was probably the best thing you did. I don't think you necessarily caught him with anything too massive, but the placement of the shots was what was doing the damage from where I was seeing. I mean, your jab was straight and strong. Your shot placement was great, man. I think, that's my assessment anyway. Where does that performance rank compared to your other performances as a pro, Elliot?
It's definitely my best performance, to be honest, because of the level of fighter that I was in there with. But if you look at my record, in only 8 fights, I've fought 4 people with winning records. 2 of them have been unbeaten. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's not, obviously it was a big step up, but I've already boxed 2 undefeated fighters and took their own. Do you know what I mean? From so early in my career, For me, it wasn't like a big jump, in my opinion. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, he's fought at the highest level, and it was my toughest fight, but it wasn't like I was just jumping into a city fight sort of thing. That definitely ranks as my best performance, but I'm just getting better and better now, so hopefully more to come.
And speaking of more to come, ideally, when do you want to be out next, Elliot?
I'd love to be out every month, but I think when I spoke to my manager the other day, he's just doing some works and having a little look about and seeing what he can get for me and things like that. I'd love a title next, or try and get a little deal, like a promotional deal, with like a contract with one of the big promoters. But listen, it's up to my manager. Well, he'd let my manager do his job and see what he can get. Hopefully, maybe an English title. If I can't get the English title, then I'll fight for the Southern area in my next fight. Maybe end of Feb or March. Just get a 10-rounder under my belt, or at least get the training for a 10-rounder, and then pick up a title. Then hopefully after, if they can only get me a Southern area next, go and win that, then sort of hopefully go and fight for the English straight after. Do you know what I mean? And pick up a couple of belts next year.
Yeah, that'd be nice. And there are so many names domestically at welter. Is there anyone in particular? Is there anyone in particular on your radar at all, Elliot, or not?
To be honest, it's hard to tell. Obviously, you've got Harry Scarfe just won the British title, and I'd love to win the British title. So, of course, he's got a target on his back. Anyone with belts, to be honest, whoever's got the belts, I want to fight. And I'd love to have the opportunity to fight for a British title now. But obviously, I know my team. You need to. It's a thingy. You need
marathon,
to
marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah, you know what I mean. So if I can go and pick up a couple of titles on the way, then who knows? End of the year, fight for the British title. That'd be lovely. Or just have to wait and see. But anyone with titles, I want to fight and I want to win. Do you know what I mean? I want to be a champion.
You've kind of already answered this next question I was going to give you, but every year in December, everyone that I interview, I like to ask what's on their Christmas wish list in terms of their boxing career. What do they want the following year to bring them? Like I say, you pretty much got into that in the, a moment ago, but I'll ask you again, Christmas wish list, in a realistic world, Elliot, where do you want to be this time next year, mate?
This time next year, I'd love to be on a big platform. Do you know what I mean? I'd love to get signed up by one of the big promoters. That's a massive thing for me. I'd love that. And obviously, of course, I'd love to have a belt or two, be it the Southern area and the English, if realistically, timing wise and stuff like that. I think them two belts could actually come next year. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that'd be lovely.
Couple of titles and then either just the English. And then a deal, or if I have to pick up the Southern area first, then Southern area English champion, and then hopefully get a deal as well.
There we go. It'd be a great 2024. And I want to ask you this as well.
Big 2024, mate.
I want to ask you this as well. If you could make any dream fight in 2024 that doesn't include yourself, it can be a domestic fight, it can be a world level fight, any weight, what fight would you make?
Oh, I would like to see Canelo Alvarez versus Terence Crawford.
Oh, at what weight? Yeah. Middleweight, yeah?
Yeah, I reckon, I'm pretty sure that's the fight Crawford wants. I'm a big fan of Terence Crawford, and I think that's the fight he wants. And I'm pretty sure I see something that he said he would go up to 160 and fight him. So, if that's middleweight, isn't it? Yeah, 160. Yeah. I'd like to have that. Just have a little watch of that. I think that'd be a real good fight.
That certainly would be. And just finally, before we wrap it up, Elliot, if you've got any closing words to the listeners, if you want to sign out with a message, if you want to thank some sponsors, if you want to drop your social media handles, take it away, mate. The floor is yours.
Well, listen, just want to say a big thank you to my sponsors, RMS, Grab and Skipper. Without them, it wouldn't be possible to make the move up to Walsall and Boxmart Elite, BCB Boxing, do you know what I mean, and keep the dream alive. Because at the beginning of this year, I was about to pack it in and retire. Do you know what I mean? When things weren't going my way, and I just thought it weren't for me. And I found a new gym. My sponsors have carried on to shine their support, and big thanks to them. You can follow me on Instagram at Elliot Wow. That's what I've got. That's all my socials, Elliot. So that's it, yeah.
Excellent, my friend. Excellent. Listen, Elliot, it's been a real pleasure finally getting you on the podcast. Thank you for your time.
Hopefully this time next year, give me another one and we'll see where I'm at.
Absolutely. We definitely will. We definitely will.
Yeah.
Thanks for your time. Congrats on your win. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And we'll speak sometime in the new year, my friend.
Lovely. Cheers, mate.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. Just one piece to bring you at the moment. Oshiki Foster will be defending his super featherweight world title against Abraham Nova. That one to go down at the theatre at the MSG live on ESPN. The date for that is February the 16th, which is a Friday. So all the best there to both guys. I don't really have a horse in the race. Moving now to the preview part of the show. This one goes down later tonight at the Hangar in California, USA. It's going to be live on Fight TV. We're going to see return to the ring for Kubrat Pulev. I believe he is the I believe he's the main event, though I'm not entirely sure, so don't take that for gospel. But anyway, Kubrat Pulev hasn't boxed since July of last year. I was at that fight against Derek Chisora. But anyway, he gets in here with Poland's Andrzej Wozik, who's 34-2. He's been around for a long, long time. I'm quite surprised to see that he's only 36 years of age. I remember him, you know, he's been around forever, really. Lost to Povetkin back in 2013. He's always had quite a padded record, to be honest. Hasn't really boxed anyone or beaten anyone of note. He loses when he steps up. I mean, he beat Danny Williams back in 2014, beat Franz Botha back in 2014, beat Mike Shepard in 2015. And in 2016, he decided to not box. I think he beat, at the time, Albert Sosnowski. That was back in September 2016. And then he returned to the ring in September 2022. So he had 6 years out the ring. He come back and got knocked out in two rounds by a guy who was 3-4 with two draws. Then he come back in July of this year, and he knocked out a guy in one round who was 6-2 with a draw. So basically, he's had two fights in the last 7 years, and he's done three rounds in that time. He got knocked out in two rounds and beat one guy by knockout in one round. So I don't expect him to be any match over 10 rounds for Kubrat Pulev. Kubrat Pulev should knock him out with ease, to be totally honest with you. Also on the card, we're going to see the brother of Kubrat Pulev. He is currently 17-1, Tavel Pulev. He gets in there with Dionardo Minor, who is 7-3 with two draws. That's over six rounds there. Tavel Pulev, as some people will remember, lost his O to Sergei Kovalev. That was back in May of 2022. He's had one comeback fight since then. He's back out again. He can certainly punch. And also on the card, Igis Kavalauskis, the Mean Machine, 23-2 with a draw currently. He returns to the ring in a very easy fight, to be honest. He gets in with Jose Marufo, who's 14-12 with two draws. That's over eight rounds there. Kavalauskis hasn't fought in over a year. He beat friend of the show Michael Fox in his last fight. Moving now to, again, that one goes down later tonight. Moving now to Friday. This one goes down at the Estadio Luna Park in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Over here, Gustavo Daniel Lemos. You may remember the name. He's 28-0. In his last fight, he was able to stop Lee Selby. Lee Selby, after that fight, decided to retire and become a trainer. He went and got his license, and he's been training a few guys. And in that time, as far as I'm aware, Gustavo Lemos hasn't done anything. He hasn't fought since, and he's back in the ring here. And it's been a year and 9 months. He's back here, like I say, in his home country of Argentina. And it's back in the same venue, the same one he beat Lee Selby in. He gets in with Javier Clavero, who's 30-10 with two draws, only been stopped twice. Be interesting to see how he gets on. It's good to see him back. He's a good fighter, Gustavo Lemos. Moving now to the star in Sydney. Again, this is also tomorrow. It goes down in Australia. We're going to see over here former world title challenger Liam Wilson, 12-2, get in there with Jackson John England, who apparently is bang up for this fight. He's 15-2. He's hoping he can capitalize on this and beat Liam Wilson, although I think it's not going to happen. It's over 10 rounds there at Super Featherweight. Also on the card as well, Sam Goodman, 16-0, gets in with Zhong Liu, who is 19-0. It's over 12 rounds there at Super Bantamweight. I've got to hold my hands up and say I've never heard of Zhong Liu. I just want to have a little look at him. He's a massive, massive underdog, but he's 19-0, so I'm not sure what that's about. I don't know if he's got a padded record or whatever, but just want to have a little click on him, actually. He could be. This is the thing about some of these guys, you know. Nice big record, but for some reason, massive underdog. I mean, he's a southpaw, 32 years of age, 5'7", super bantam, Chinese fighter. beat a guy last time out who was 10-0, stopped him in round 7. I don't know. I mean, I really don't know, to be honest. I'd have to spend more time having a look, but I can't understand why he's such a massive underdog unless he's absolutely dreadful and he's like the boxing world's best-kept secret that he's terrible. Moving now to the Carib Royale Orlando. Again, this one's tomorrow in Florida, USA. Over here, let's start with the undercard. We're going to see Cuba's Yoenis Teles, who currently has a record of 6-0 with 5 KOs. He gets in there with a guy called Livan Navarro, who's 15-1. Navarro, if I'm not mistaken, is also Cuban. Yeah, also Cuban, known as the Machine Gun Kid. I like that for a nickname. He got stopped in one round back in 2020 to Justin Deloach, and you look through his record, he doesn't really have any recognizable names. The best win, I guess, or the biggest name I recognize on there is Bradis Prescott. He went 8 rounds with him and beat him unanimously back in 2019. Bradis Prescott, yeah, I mean, God, he would have been well finished by then. Anyway, Yoenis Teles is certainly one to watch, by the way, because he's the guy, last time out, he stopped Sergio Garcia, and that was a massive statement from where I'm standing. Sergio Garcia, just to recap, obviously was 34-2, and he took him on in just his sick fight, Teles. And Sergio Garcia obviously had been in there with the likes of Tony Harrison, the likes of Sebastian Fundora, Ted Cheeseman, and other guys. And yeah, he stopped him in 3 rounds, become the only man to stop him. So he's certainly one to watch, Yoenis Teles. Can't wait to see him again. This one's going to be on DAZN. And also on the card as well, 2 females that are friends of the show. May the best female win. Shadeja Green, 13-0, over 10 twos against former world champion Franchon Cruz DAZN, who's currently 8-2, is for the vacant WBC World Super Middleweight title. Franchon Cruz coming off that loss last time out to Savannah Marshall, which was a majority decision over 10 rounds, by the way. I don't agree with that. I think Savannah won it quite clearly, but that was just my opinion. But yeah, she's a friend of the show. I quite like Franchon Cruz, but it's going to be interesting nonetheless. I don't think, I mean, my pick is probably Shadeja Green on points. I don't think she's going to stop DAZN. Also on the card, Jake Paul, the headliner, 7-1 as a pro. He gets in there with a pro. I don't know if you've heard of this guy, Eddie. I certainly hadn't until the fight had been made. Andre August, who's 10-1 with a draw. 5 KOs. He's a cruiserweight. He is 35 years of age, though he's a cruiserweight with a height of 5'10". He got knocked out in 2 rounds in his 1 loss back in 2018 to Eric Abraham. But he's been a pro since 2013, which is quite interesting. So he's obviously been boxing for a long time, but he's been quite inactive. I mean, 1 fight in 2013, 1 fight in 2014, 2 fights in 2015. Then he has nothing in 2016, 2 fights in 2017. He gets knocked out in 2018 in his 1 fight of the year. He comes back in 2019 with 4 wins, and then he takes almost 4 years out, and he comes back in his last fight, which was earlier this year in August. So he was out from 2019, from November 2019 to August 2023, but he comes back and beats an undefeated guy on points who was 7-0 called Brandon Martin. I don't know who that is either, but yeah, I don't like the fact he's only 5'10" and he's weighing, you know, he's weighing at cruiserweight kind of weight. But it's just, I just don't know this guy, and it's kind of mad that he hasn't really fought anyone of note. Most of the people he's beaten have had losing records and stuff like that. He's boxed 3 debutants, including a draw with one of them. But that was a long, long time ago. And the best looking record on his record was 7-0, which was in his last fight. And that was his comeback fight after 4 years out. So I don't know if he's got better in that time or what. But he pretty much won every round against Brandon Martin there. But yeah, like I say, I've never heard of him. Have you heard of him, Eddie? Do you know anything about the guy?
Nah, I don't think so. Although, it's Andre August, right, you said?
Yeah.
It does sound kind of familiar, to be honest. Like,
or like he was on a card or something that I might have, I don't know if I was on it or saw it or, you know, like, I mean, obviously years ago, you wonder if it's the one. It kind of sounds familiar, but I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. But to get this is, he's got a fight with Jake Paul, which is, I mean, there's a lot of people that would love to get a fight with Jake Paul because, you know, that's dollars right away. So, you know, it's as crazy as his career has been, obviously up and down, where he's, you know, he hasn't been that active, only fought a few times here, a few times there. You know, without a doubt, you know, with Jake Paul, you know, losing to Tommy Fury and, you know, them wanting to be, you know, get him back into that, you know, invincible, you know, somewhat, I guess, if you want to say that at that level kind of situation. I mean, this is a good guy to pick. He's got a good record. Even if you don't look behind the numbers, he still has a good record. So it looks good for Jake Paul to get a fight, you know, get a win against a fighter like this. You know what I mean? And he's been boxing for a long time. So he's like, yo, he's a career fighter. There's a lot they can say, regardless of what his resume truly says, it looks good for him. You know what I mean? And the guy's obviously going to take it. It's probably going to be without a doubt, the biggest payday he's ever had. And it's just, it's worth it. You know, all in all, and, you know, the people are going to pay to see it because it's Jake Paul, and most of his supporters are definitely going to want to see it. And those who can't stand Jake Paul are going to want to see it because they're going to want to see him lose. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to digest with it. There's a lot that, you know, that you can get from the fight. So, I mean, not necessarily a hardcore boxing fan, but for the most part, you know, boxing fans are going to, you know, I mean, fans of this kind of situation with boxing are going to enjoy this kind of thing. So, hey, you know what I mean? If it gets more eyes onto boxing, I'm happy with it. You know what I mean? Don't get me wrong. You know, it's kind of a sideshow thing. But like I said, regardless, if it gets more butts in the seats to actually watch some of these real good up and coming fighters in the future, I'm all for it.
There we go. Eddie Chambers all for it. We're going to move now to the, this is a real, real challenge of a pronunciation here. Weinach Circus in Baden-Württemberg, Germany. Over here, we used to joke about this guy, big heavyweight Daniel Dietz, who's 6'8½". Eddie, I'm sure you remember him. We used to say, oh, you know, he's putting on weight every time he fights. He seems to be on no diet, the seafood diet. You see food and you eat it, I think we said. But anyway, he was knocking a few guys out, and I don't think we've kind of mentioned him recently, but I've noticed he's back. He's 11-0 with 11 KOs, 10 of them in the first round. One went into round two. He's back here. He gets in with a guy who's 13-1 called Felix Langberg. That's over 10 rounds there for the IBF and IBO European heavyweight titles. So, yeah, Daniel Dietz is certainly one to watch as it goes. Moving now to the Beacon of Light in Sunderland over here. We're going to see friend of the show. It's in the UK. It's in Tyne and Wear. It's going to be on DAZN over here. Friend of the show, Josh Kelly, 14-1 with a draw in a 12-rounder. He's back out. He gets in with a guy called Placido Ramirez, who's 24-3. He's only boxed once this year, Josh Kelly. But this guy, Placido Ramirez, again, it's another guy that I've never heard of. And they're doing this quite frequently now with Josh Kelly. I mean, his last fight, he got in with that Gabriel Corzo. No one knew who he was. He went 12 rounds with him. A couple fights before that, got in there with Lucas Bastida. No one knew who he was. Went a whole 10 rounds with him as well. This guy here, again, just a name that they've just plucked from somewhere. He's 24-3 with 17 KOs. He's been stopped in two of his three losses. I don't know who this guy is. Like, I don't know what to say. It's just another fight that seems really puzzling that it's been made. I just don't understand it. There's 7 fights listed on the undercard, and all 7 fights don't have an opponent, or all 7 fighters don't have an opponent just yet either. So I'm not sure what's going on there. Right, moving to certainly the fight of the weekend now, or the fight card of the weekend. It's going to be happening at the Desert Diamond Arena in Glendale, Arizona, USA. Over here, let's start with the undercard. This would be a good one, actually, if we're going by, you know, on paper record-wise. We're going to see Junaid Bostan, a prospect from the UK, 7-0 with 6 KOs. He gets in with a fighter from the US called Gordy Russ II, who's 6-0 with 6 KOs. So that could be quite fiery there. Haven't seen anything of this Gordy Russ guy. Completely never heard of him. But like I say, 6-0, 6 KOs. Massive, massive underdog. You can get about eight times your money if he was to stop Junaid Bostan. Okay, that is that one there. Moving up the card once again, we're going to see the UK's Peter McGraw in a 10-rounder here. He's 8-0. He gets in with Jericho O'Quinn, who's 16-1 with a draw. Peter McGraw is a really good talent. I'm expecting a good performance from him there. I'm expecting him to win, and I'm expecting him to look quite good. Galal Yafai as well, the Olympic gold medalist on the card as well. Our man, 5-0. It's for the WBC International Flyweight title. It's over 10 rounds there. He gets in with Rocco Santamauro, who is 22-2. Santamauro in his picture on BoxRec. I don't know if anyone's seen that, but he's got a fantastic moustache there. Brilliant tash. He lost his last fight, though. He lost a unanimous decision to Ricardo Sandoval. That was back in June of this year. Also on the card, former world champion Murojan Akhmadaliev, 11-1. It's a 12-rounder for him, and it is, I believe, his comeback fight after losing to Marlon Topalez in a big upset. He is getting in there with Kevin Gonzalez, who's 26-0 with a draw, 13 KOs. 5'4" southpaw from Mexico. And the main event is going to be a really good fight, Eddie, and I'm hoping that you're going to watch it because you probably haven't seen much of the UK's fighter. But let's start with a man that you have seen and do think is a good fighter. Jesse Bam Rodriguez, 18-0, and the UK's Sonny Edwards, 20-0. It's a brilliant fight, and it seems like I've been waiting on this fight to happen for such a long time. Sonny Edwards, friend of the show, unbelievable fighter, possibly pound for pound the best fighter in the UK. You know, we've got some good fighters here in the UK, you know, Tyson Fury, Josh Taylor, Callum Smith. We've got some good fighters. For some reason, I'm not able to think of any others at the moment, but, you know, really skillful, pound for pound, our best fighters in the UK. That's probably the best that we have at the moment. Unless I'm missing someone now, I can't think. But anyway, Sonny Edwards, arguably pound for pound best fighter in the UK. Really, really, really good talent. Not much of a puncher, but boxing brain, unbelievable. But like I say, he's getting in with a bit of a killer here. Jesse Bam Rodriguez, although I talk about killer, at one point he was stopping pretty much everyone, you know, one after the other, after the other, after the other. And then they gave him too many fights in 2022. I think they gave him 3 fights that year, and they were like, you know, tough, tough fights. Carlos Cuadras, Wissaxel Wangek, a.k.a. Sorong Vasai, or Sarisaket Sorong Vasai, and Israel Gonzalez, which was a very close fight that Gonzalez won. And he seemed a little bit burned out, you know. So actually, he's gone the distance. He's gone 12 rounds in 3 of his last 4 fights. Sonny Edwards, though, like I said, isn't the biggest puncher, and also has gone the distance in, you know, in many of his last fights. He's gone 12 rounds 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times in a row. He's gone 12 rounds. And prior to that, he'd gone 10 rounds and then another 10 rounds. You've got to go back 4.5 years to his last knockout. But other than that, he goes 10 rounds or he goes 12 rounds. It's a phenomenal fight, Eddie. It really is. Sonny Edwards, though, I would love to see him do it. I really would. He's a 2-1 underdog to win on points. That's the only way he wins, by the way. He's certainly not going to stop Bam Rodriguez. Bam Rodriguez, I think, can win on points. I think that's what they're expecting. And I also think he hits hard enough, and he's, you know, he hits hard enough to potentially hurt Sonny Edwards. I was there when Sonny Edwards got dropped by Marcel Braithwaite, who had no knockouts to his name at that point. And he certainly isn't a puncher even now. And he dropped Edwards. If Bam was to connect the way he can connect, he certainly would have Edwards down. Bam has been boxing at a level that obviously Sonny Edwards hasn't boxed at just yet. Even though he's been a world champion, great performance against Felix Alvarado, that's definitely the standout. Also Maruti Mafanlane as well, good fighter as well, we'll say that was a great win for him. But you know, they are good fighters in their own right, but they're not a Sirisiket Sorung Vasai, they're not, in my opinion, a Carlos Quadras, you know. So I think those wins that Bam has a better than those of Sonny's, you know. But Sonny dominated those guys in great fashion and may have been able to do the same against the guys that Bam beat. That's the intrigue about this whole fight. It's a great, great fight. Both guys have got excellent boxing brains. It's going to be a real chess match. If I'm going to pick a winner, I think I'm going to have to side with my countryman here, Eddie, Sonny Edwards. I think he can win this fight on points, but he's going to have to be on his A game. He really has to be, because I think Bam has been quite clever in the build-up. Edwards is a massive talker, doing lots and lots of talking on social media, whereas Bam Rodriguez has been very kind of scarily quiet. He hasn't given in to the mind games and the back and forths. He's decided to lock himself away, not respond to the tweets, not respond to the, you know, to the trash talking, and he's just gone away and been plying his craft behind closed doors. And for me, that's a bit of a worry. I'm expecting a lot from Bam on the night. It's going to be a cracking fight, and I'm so happy it's finally come around. But you tell me your thoughts on the fight. Like I say, I think it's going to be brilliant.
Yeah, I actually know a lot about Sonny Edwards. He's been a part of a game that I like, that I've been wanting to get in my hands on. It's, the Undisputed game. He was actually had a lot to do with that, from what I understand. But he's also a really, really, really good boxer, really good fighter, a really good boxer, great IQ, different things. I've seen him. I haven't seen that much, but from what I've seen, it's impressive stuff. And as much as I really like Bam Rodriguez and what he can do, I made a little small wager.
Oh, no, that means it's going to lose.
I hope not. That's part of my parlay of one that is in the works and is actually working out for me. The first fight, I think it was the same night, if I'm not mistaken, was, what's the kid's name? Him and he had a little thing with Keyshawn Davis. It was him and Keyshawn Davis were going back and forth. I can't remember this kid's name. I had him winning.
Was it Kid Austin? Kid Austin. What's his name again?
That's his name? Kid Austin? Something else.
They call him Kid Austin. I forgot his.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Yeah, that's him. Basically him. So, and he won. Then Ryan Garcia.
Not Kid Austin. No, Frank something.
No, not Frank Martin.
Frank
another
Martin,
guy.
Right?
No, another kid. Damn it. I can't remember the kid's name. But anyway, I'll get it. This is my parlay, so I'll bring it up at some point. But he won. I think it was by knockout that he won as well, which worked out for me. Then Ryan Garcia in round 7-9, he ended up stopping his guy in the eighth. Perfect. It worked out for me. Now Sonny Edwards wins by decision. And I think that's the last one. If Sonny Edwards wins by decision, then my parlay comes through. I only put $5 on this, and I stand to win like $400. So, yeah, that's great. That'll be the first win that I had since I've been doing this. Yes, laugh at me. Go ahead, Joe. But it'll be my first win.
Nice.
It'll be my first win. Now, next time, next, the other one that I had that was like almost $7,000. Yeah, I didn't get that one, but I think I might get this one. If Sonny can do the work, which I expect him to be able to do some good stuff in there. I don't know if he's going to win, but it would be really nice if he did. But anyway, aside from my bets and my craziness, it's a fantastic fight skill-wise. The IQs are extremely high for both guys. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to be watching this with vested interest. I want to make sure that my parlay works out, but also really just am looking to enjoy a great night of fights with that.
Well, all the best to both guys there, but particularly Sonny Edwards. Hopefully he can win and put an end to Eddie's curse of picking fighters that he wants to win and they end up losing. All the best to you, Eddie. Good luck there. Moving now to the Armory in Minneapolis, Minnesota, USA. Over here, I can't believe I'm saying this, Eddie. Two guys here that are both friends of the show, both former world champions. You may feel like you've banged your head and woke up in 2008. Have you heard about this fight, by the way, before I say the two names?
No. Well, maybe I did, but I just wasn't thinking of it. So let's hear it.
Okay, so coming off a 2-year and 4-month layoff is Robert Guerrero, and he gets in with, coming off 5 years and 4 months out the ring, Andre Berto.
What? That is a strange but interesting kind of fight. I mean, if they were both in their prime, but I mean,
well,
they boxed back in
2012, and Robert Guerrero won unanimously then.
Right. I do remember they did. So I guess they're rematching it. Better late than never, right?
Right. 11 years later, right, yeah.
Jesus, 11 years. That is a long time when you think about it. Dang. But that's, it could be still interesting. You know what I mean? These guys are still young enough to where it can be spicy. It's not like watching James Toney and Razor Ruddock, which unfortunately was, you know, just, you know, seeing two guys that honestly shouldn't be in there, but at least they were in there together. Could didn't kill each other. So, but yeah, this will be a little more interesting.
Yeah, crazy fight. It's over 10 rounds as well. Robert Guerrero, like I say, he's had the much shorter break, 2 years, 4 months. But he was coming off 4 wins. He actually decided to kind of, I don't know if he actually retired, but 4 wins in a row, including one against Victor Ortiz. You know, he went out on that, you know, whereas obviously Andre Berto, I mean, he went out on a split decision win 5 years ago against Devin Alexander. So yeah, you know, he's been out the ring 5 years. They've made Robert Guerrero the favorite. He won the fight unanimously back in 2012 anyway, so you'd have to kind of ride with him, I guess. Also on this card, we are going to see Julio Cesar Martinez, 20-2 for the WBC flyweight world title. He gets in with Angelino Cordova, who's 18-0 with a draw. Julio Cesar Martinez to win this one by KO is a decent price. Again, I think he isn't the same fighter he was. I think that was always bound to happen. Took a lot of punishment with his face forward kind of style, and he doesn't seem to kind of be as good as he was a few years ago. I remember when he got completely took to school last year by Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez. But this guy, Angelino Cordova, I mean, he's from Venezuela. I don't think he's that great, you know. Yeah, I'm expecting. I think Julio Cesar Martinez could do this one by KO. That'd be my pick, at least. Also on the card, we're going to see the rematch between Chris Colbert, 17-1, and Jose Valenzuela, who's 12-2. The pair boxed last time out. Chris Colbert got the decision. A lot of people said that he was very lucky. A lot of people felt that he actually, you know, won the fight because they robbed Valenzuela. The rematch goes down here. The first fight was over 10 rounds. This one is going to be over 12 rounds. So all the best there to both men. He got it by just a point on all three cards, Colbert. He actually is the underdog going into this rematch. And the main event, David Morrell, 9-0 for the WBA World Super Middleweight title. He gets in with Senna Agbeko, who's 28-2 from Ghana. He's been stopped one time, Agbeko. He resides in Nashville, Tennessee these days. The one loss came back in 2014. Since then, he's been boxing kind of low-level guys. Got a win against Brian Vera 5 years ago. Lost to Vladimir Shishkin back in 2021. Since then, he's put together 5 wins, 4 by KO. But obviously much lower level guys. I'm expecting David Morrell to go in there and steamroll this guy, to be completely honest. I'd probably say you'll probably get him in the first half of the fight. And then the final card to mention goes down in Ghana at the Accra Sports Stadium on Tuesday, December 19th. We're going to see Prince Patel, 28-1 with two draws. I can't believe he's had that many fights. They've been under the radar fights in car parks and things like that in Africa. He gets in with Aliyu Lasisi, who's 17-0 with a draw. It's over 12 rounds there for the vacant IBO Bantamweight World title. All the best to Prince Patel. But anyway, that brings the show to a close. In part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest, the undefeated prospect, Elliot Wow. And then in part two, we did the news, just one thing that we brought you. And then the previewing has just come to an end. It's now time for me to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 426 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the undefeated welterweight prospect, Mr. Elliot Wow. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. There has been one piece of news break whilst we've been recording the show, and it's that on February the 10th, we're going to see that rescheduled fight between Hamza Shiraz and Liam Williams. Again, the date for that is February the 10th. It's going to be at the Copper Box Arena live on TNT Sport. I don't know if they're announcing the undercard just yet, but great to see that one rescheduled. But yeah, that's about everything from myself, though. Enjoy your weekends, people, and we shall see you all again same time next week.